Well, I think it's an interesting question. It's been one I've been trying to rationalize since the November election. It's been discussions with family and friends and noticing that nobody is really able to take the back seat anymore. We're seeing politics that have overwhelmingly exhausted us and our time and our resources. We're marching for causes that we know to be true, that we're trying to show the rest of the world that we believe in this, this is valuable, and yet somebody's not listening. And so I was always taught, I was always of the opinion that representation should reflect the views of the people. And so part of what I'd like to see in this election is what are the values. I think an educational voice, an educated opinion is needed for this process. And this district especially has 11 different colleges. And with that mentality, with that idea, you can learn a lot from your constituents. You can learn a lot from what they tell you, how they communicate to you. And I feel that that voice is definitely needed this time of year, but also in this upcoming election.
Let me ask you to unpack a certain phrase, though. Nobody's willing to take the back seat. So is that a vote for me, I will compromise in order to get governance done? Or what do you mean by that?
I don't see it as a compromise. I think all politics and all public office is an understanding of opinion, especially in this district with a number of educated individuals. We can articulate our ideas in phenomenal ways. And with my background in education, I'm supposed to take my cue from my students. My students teach me what they understand, how they understand something, and there are some things in my classroom, for instance, that are just in error. Comma doesn't go there. This is grammatically incorrect. Your interpretation of this passage is not what's been said by the author in this other place. And so it's always based on evidence. So I don't see it as a compromise as much as a willingness to listen and a willingness to learn. Even if there is a fundamental disagreement on the philosophy behind a policy or a value, really what it comes down to is a willingness, an ability to actually listen to the other side and then to articulate the objection back. So it's more about communication, it's more about the rhetoric that's being used. And in the end, there are going to be values that we disagree on, and fundamentally we'll not be able to find middle ground or even a way to build that bridge between those two sides. But when it comes down to it, it's more about the communication. It's about the actual process of coming to an understanding for each other.
You mentioned the 11 colleges and universities in the district. That would indicate that higher education is a strong plank in your campaign. What about it do you hope to promote?
Well, I've been very, very fortunate to see a level of activism from young people in this district, which is, it's just very heartwarming and it's very hopeful. We have a lot of individuals, a lot of students who are seeing what's happening, and really the outcome that needs to come from this is voter engagement. The level of activism, none of us can really take that back seat and stop trying to promote these values, specifically with my views and some of the views that I've been articulating through the campaign is a populist perspective as well as a democratic voice that is willing to stand up for healthcare, economic growth, but also an understanding and an ability to address the real issues and to think ahead more than just an election. My background is in education. I'm not a politician. And a number of people who have said, this is great, this is really kind of surprising that you're wanting to do this. Part of what they've then said is, don't become a politician. And I think part of what a number of individuals are seeing is that we don't trust politicians anymore. We don't trust those that have been put into office because something's wrong with the system. I think there's a fundamental change that needs to happen. Outside of school, one of my 1 o'clock juniors was studying for the AP US government test, and they brought me their textbook, and they said, could you just quiz me for like 10 minutes before I go and try and cram some more? And a number of issues that were brought up in the textbook, I just go to a page and ask a question, and I would then, in the follow-up to the question, so what is the Dawes Act? How many votes does it take to get a law passed in the Senate? And one of the things that was very interesting is that from that discussion, the conversation was, well, that doesn't sound very efficient. That doesn't sound very practical. It doesn't sound like that's actually helpful. And he kind of said, yeah, but that's the way it is. There's no way to fix it. There's no way to make it better. And so I think part of what people are wanting to see is a little bit of sanity, because we are trying to understand what's occurred since this November election. And all of us with informed opinions are kind of looking and going, well, what's the change that is needed? And how can we bring about that change?
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. We're talking with Ben Webb, who's announced he is a candidate for Congress in the Democratic primary in the 13th Congressional District, hoping to win the slot to take on Congressman Rodney Davis, the Republican incumbent. Current Education Secretary Betsy DeVos is quite firm on increasing charter school participation and quite firm in hewing to the Trump-submitted budget, which would eliminate funding for special needs kids and a number of other categories that help K-12 schools through federal aid because of low-income guidelines. Where do you stand on those kinds of proposals?
As an advocate for a number of special needs programs, including Special Olympics, as well as the Penguin Project in McLean County, which is having their performance this weekend, I have never really understood this administration's rationale behind education as a budgetary expense rather than an investment. I see no better investment than in our schools, in our teachers, and in professional development to then bring about a stronger future for both these future leaders, but also the individuals who are then going to inherit this world as government officials, as politicians, as lawyers, as doctors. And so I don't understand the cuts that are being made to education. That being said, I, ever since college, have looked at this and said, well, budget cuts in education are just inevitable. You will never be funded enough. And so one of the things that I've been very adamant about promoting on our website is fully funded education. Why would we do anything less? Why would we ever do 90% of a budget? Why would we ever do cuts to programs that provide meals to students of diverse backgrounds? Or specifically, probably the better way to explain it would be, why would we ever make cuts that are there to benefit all people of all ways of life? And in programs, especially in lower socioeconomic statuses, in impoverished areas, why would we hurt the future of those individuals? And so I would love to see a change in the rhetoric that's being used by our current education secretary, because, quite frankly, the cuts to special needs and the cuts to special education that are being proposed, as well as Medicaid, it's going to have some long-lasting implications.
The Trump administration is proposing those cuts in partly to pay for an increase in military spending. What is your big picture approach to budgeting? What wins, what loses, and how would you balance a budget, which actually hasn't really been addressed for some decades?
Well, and I think it's also important that we're looking at balancing a budget in our own state, and we've had limited success in passing a budget. We have had no success in passing a budget. And so I think part of what's really crucial with the budgeting is that social programs, education, healthcare, those are some major priorities. And when you look at our military spending, we're spending an astronomical amount right now. And yet we're talking about making cuts to programs that are going to impact the livelihood of individuals here in our state, across the nation. And yes, military spending is necessary, but the idea of making cuts to fundamental programs that benefit human lives and their livelihood here in the States for the purpose of then increasing military spending, I feel that that's a little misguided.
You've mentioned healthcare a couple times now. What ground do you plan to hold on that?
Well, I think it's important that we look at how we can move to a single-payer system. The current coupling of healthcare to employment is, and if we look at the ACA, it is in need of improvement. It's in need of, rather than repealing and replacing, we actually need to get down to how this was created and how we can actually make a system that provides this right, not a privilege, to all individuals, all Americans. One of the important milestones of what we're looking at as a campaign is our ability to then provide that right rather than looking at the repeal and replace. Because in many ways, the system that was designed with the intention of, in a while, we can go back, we can repeal it, we can remove it, we can see it fail. But also the rhetoric that's being used around Obamacare is very much showing that it has failed. A number of things that have been published by GOP senators and representatives, it's saying that it is failing. It's saying that it is hurting Americans. And yet, the cuts that we're looking at right now are very clearly going to cut and remove people from the insurance that they have. And so we need to look at that. We need to actually address that. And I think it's important that we are making sure that healthcare providers are involved in that discussion. For a number of years in education, we follow the legislation and the rules that are provided by our politicians. And so it'd be very interesting to see what the experts, doctors, patients, insurance companies could be a part of that discussion, but they should not own the conversation. And I think bringing it to the people is what's actually going to bring about a system that helps everyone.
How would you pay for single payer?
Well, that's the important aspect, and I'm not an expert on that category. I think with all of these programs, you really have to look at how we are paying for anything.
Do we increase taxes? Do we cut the military substantially? Do we do things to entitlements that would cause people to contribute more? Or what's your general approach to paying for these things?
I think the general approach is that cuts to the military, while it would bring about, it would actually open up a number of funds that could then be allocated to healthcare, I don't see it as the silver bullet that actually solves the problem. Raising taxes could bring about that change. I would say it's a complex answer, and I'm not exactly sure how. I think a number of these programs, a number of these initiatives, the question always comes down to how can we pay for that? And I think what's important is you're bringing the experts to the table. You bring in the economics majors, you bring in the poli-sci majors, you bring in all of these individuals that are experts in this field, and they can actually crunch the numbers. They can actually do the math that will show this is how it impacts high-wealth individuals. This is how it impacts low-wealth individuals. This is what it's going to do for all the demographics. I think what you don't do is you don't try and shove a vote, or you don't try to push a vote in the craziest way possible. And I'm basing it off of what I've read. And I think what's really important is all of that is show. All of that is a lot of theatrics, which bring about an outcome, but then it also brings the system into question. It asks, what is the real goal here? Is it to say we got the job done? Is it to say that this is better and this is why it's better? Don't question us. I think in the end, you have to bring in the experts. And I think that's something that's lacking. We do look to politicians for all the answers. And I think what's important is that in surrounding yourself with the actual experts, those that can give you the non-polarized, non-biased information that's not going to promote partisanship or just self-interest, that's where you're going to actually get the real answer. And that's where you can kind of find ways to either increase spending in one area to then bring about a specific outcome, or you might have to cut other programs that are not being efficiently run. And so I think it's a mixture.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. We're talking with Democratic candidate for Congress in the 13th District, Ben Webb. There are at least two other announced or likely candidates. One of them has formed an exploratory committee, State Representative Carol Ammons of the Champaign-Urbana area, and David Gill, the physician who has run six times before. Distinguish yourself from those and from the other people who are also doing exploratory meet and greets.
It is a populated area. It's kind of nice to see how many different individuals are running. And I think part of what's really beneficial about this process is that the voters are then able to say, this is where we think this individual will best serve. You've got a current representative with a great track record. You've got a physician who has run in the past and has expressed his interest in running. I think the thing that I bring to the table is a newness, but also just an outside opinion and a willingness to be open to learning. As an educator, I value that learning process and that ability to, with an open mind, hear the other side of the argument and potentially be convinced based on the evidence that's being presented. I feel like that openness and that ability to engage in a learning process is really significant, really important, especially in this current atmosphere where we have a current representative who, while he says that he will listen and he will be open to the suggestions of his constituents, on a number of occasions you have a lack of town hall, which a number of his constituents have requested, constricted office hours that are not really accessible to working individuals. And so I think part of what I would like to bring to the table, besides that level of communication, is another option, an additional option for the voters to say, as an educator, can I learn from you and can I be your voice in this larger, in this specific space?
How will you appeal to the largely conservative voters in some rural areas in the central part of the state and in the southern part of the state who make up a big chunk of the voting base?
I think that's important. I think part of what needs to be done is it needs to be ongoing dialogue. We in this day and age kind of stick to our own media circles, our own friend groups, and I think what's important is that we need to start having the crosstalk with individuals outside of those small bubbles. It's important to bring in number of voices, number of outside parties, but also just to kind of have that sit down and say, this is where you stand, why do you stand there? And I think part of what's going to come from this discussion, a number of meet and greets, but I think part of what I'd like to see is ongoing dialogue between all voices, not just conservative, not just liberal, but I'd like to see the conversation occur. And if I can be a part of that process, I'd like to try and change that system right now. Because right now it is very much, I'm going to surround myself with people who are going to agree with me. I'm going to surround myself with individuals who already believe the same things that I do. And I think part of what the discussion needs to be is, we shouldn't wait for a debate to then talk about the issues and to share, this is my stance on a specific topic. I think it's important to be having those as you campaign, as you say to the people, this is why I'm running, this is my stance, what is your response? And then to actually listen to that response and then to kind of hear what they have to say.
Running for Congress is expensive.
Yes.
Some people, some potential candidates in this cycle have said, you know, I can't afford to run. I can't afford to take a year to 18 months off of my job and not earn any money. I can't afford to take nearly every waking minute and place it on the phone raising money to the tune of $100,000 to $200,000 a month, every month until the election. How will you approach the technical aspect of a meaningful run for Congress?
I think that's the important part, is you want to have a meaningful run and you want to show that the constituent, you want to show the constituents of your area that this is real, this is something you actually want to do. And part of what I've done this year is I've communicated to a number of friends and family that I don't intend to stop being a teacher. I've communicated to a number of students that our work has already created for next year's performances, and I'm working on press releases for shows that we'll be doing next school year. Part of what I want to try and bring to the table is that I don't want to say I'm a teacher and then stop teaching. I want to be able to divide and show, this is my ability to be an instructor, and then this is my other priority, which is representing those of this district. And so fundraising is going to be an obstacle that I'm looking to hopefully engage with community leaders, with a number of political activists in our area, both in the Bloomington-Normal area, but also in the Champaign-Urbana area. And I'm looking for that assistance, but I'm also looking for that reasonable understanding, because I don't plan on stopping in my classroom. I do plan on teaching English literature in my freshman classes next year. I do hope to be involved in the theater program next year, because that's where my passion is, that's where my background is. And my students will see that. My students are going to be a priority. And I think part of that is communicating the message that this is my job. If the job of a congressman is to listen to the people, then I'd like to also see that from our current representative. I'd like to see that he is responsive to the individuals that he is representing.
Ben Webb, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.